5:07 in the third quarter. Dropping. It's a blitz. Blake scrambles away from it. Rolling to his right. Looking into the end zone. Looking. Fires it into the end zone. No side. Touchdown. There's now a touchdown. That's Allen Robinson. Touchdown, Jacksonville. Bortles fires to the middle of the field. Caught by Allen Robinson. That's a first down. He hit A-Rob in the middle of the field inside the 20-yard line. Got it down to the 18-yard line. First down, Jacksonville.
Now I can say it with confidence. That one takes Allen Robinson over 1,000 yards receiving. Congratulations, A-Rob.
You know what you do when Allen Hurns is hurt? Throw it to A-Rob more.
First and goal, Jags from the 8-yard line. Shotgun for Bortles. Rolling to the right. Blake looks. Pump fake. Looks. Got away from the defender. Fires into the end zone. Diving attempt by Allen Robinson. Touchdown, Jacksonville. Bortles to A-Rob for the score.
He is an absolute monster.
Second down and goal, Jags from the 7-yard line. They trail 42-32. Dropping. Looking. It's a blitz. Throws to the middle of the field. That is caught for the touchdown. Allen Robinson, a 7-yard touchdown catch from Blake Bortles, and the Jags are battling back.
Now live from Everbank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Oh, haven't heard that in a while, have you? Welcome back to me. Happy Jaguars Today morning to you out there. Happy Wednesday, brought to you by Metro Rooter. What is up, Fat Tony? How are you?
Hi, Mike. I'm good.
Can you stand me being in the studio with you?
Yeah, it's fun.
It's been a long time, man. It's like, what, 11, 12 days, something like that?
Something like that, yeah. Almost 2 weeks.
Intended me to be back on Monday. I had a little business to attend to, as you know, up in New York for SiriusXM. Got that done. I tweeted this out this morning. Not that this is particular to anyone in this specific listening audience, but just wanted to congratulate Steve Cohen, who's the senior vice president of sports programming for all of SiriusXM. For all, if it has to do with sports and you hear it on SiriusXM, he's basically in charge of every network, you know, whether it's NFL, mm-hmm. radio, fantasy, what have you. And he hired me to work with Maurice Jones-Drew about 7.5 years ago, something like that. And he just got inducted in the Fantasy Sports Hall of Fame yesterday.
Cool.
Up in New York,
yeah.
City at the FSTA Summer Convention. So a big name in the sports business. Not a name necessarily a lot of people know because he's not front of the house, as they say in the restaurant business. But he is the guy that's making it happen back in the kitchen, to be sure. So much appreciated the impact he's had on my career back here in Jacksonville, Tony. I don't know how to take things here on the first day of summer. Longest day of the year, right? Get the most daylight.
That's what they say, if there's any daylight. I suppose the sun is trying to break through the clouds, so we have enough light to call it day.
Correct. If the cloud cover was not there, the sun would be visible longer today,
yes.
than any other day of the calendar year. So you're right. I did have to wonder, do I remember the route back to work? Which exit do I take? What lane do I need to be in at which appropriate time? You know, and I did. I remembered all that. And as I come around, what is it, Gator Bowl Boulevard? What do they call that around?
Sounds right.
Is that, you know, you come off the Hart Bridge and you make that turn around the corner coming up towards Bay Street, towards the Main Street Bridge with the stadium on your right-hand side. Got the beautiful amphitheater going on and all that. Which entrance to pull into, right? Do you pull into Lot J and just kind of go down that quick one? Sometimes that's closed, that very mm-hmm. first entrance. You go to the second one, same thing. You just kind of cut through all the parking spots willy-nilly and kind of cut across that median right there, if you know what I'm talking about.
Sure,
the
yeah.
one by the Veterans Memorial Wall. And or if they're both closed, you go down to Georgia Street, make a right, and you just come in that way, right? Those are your options. So whatever the first one that's open is where I'm going to go. And there was another vehicle right in front of me that had pulled out from another one of the Jaguar parking lots and obviously had to go to the other side of the building. And he pulled in, and I followed him right along, you know, da-da-da-da-da, got in my parking spot. As soon as I get out of the car, I mean, I can hear the tire going down. So I'm thinking, did they leave a spare nail lying around from the construction of the amphitheater? It doesn't look like it. You know, there's not like a whole bunch of construction junk laying around.
No, but they're still constructing some things over there.
Could be that. I don't know. It could be a nail. It could be, I
don't know what. Still working on the practice field.
Pretty sure I'm going to get sweaty and my hands dirty for one of the rare occasions when I get my hands dirty after work today when I'm greeted with the flat tire.
Sounds like it. I hope the rain holds off for you, man.
Dude, thanks. Like, appreciate
I know
that.
They were saying it's supposed to roll in right around 95 about lunchtime.
Sounds good. Sounds
what they
good.
Were saying.
Some people eat lunch at different times.
That's
but,
true.
The vehicle in front of me, you'll be happy to know, appeared to make it through unscathed.
Oh, good for them.
I mean, I was right in their tire tracks, Tony. And I think I've taken it well.
Maybe they threw the nail.
You know, I guess vacation is,
maybe they look behind,
is showing up good on me.
They're like, oh, it's that Dempsey guy. And they threw a nail.
Maybe they're right.
Window.
Maybe they're the ones who did it. Maybe there was one of those little tire strips that popped up without, unbeknownst to me.
Mm-hmm.
That guy can't come in this way. We'll teach him not to use Georgia Street. Okay, fine. You know what? I'm in a good mood. I'm not going to let it get me down. Check me again when that rain rolls in at lunchtime, and we'll see how I feel about that. Maybe it was I was just hearing things. I don't think that was the case.
Could be.
Pretty sure I saw it going down right before my eyes. Wasn't a whole lot I could do about it. Less than an hour to go before showtime. So here we are, first day of summer. And that is, as we told Jeff Prosser, if you heard us right before the top of the hour, about 15 minutes ago, what we're going to focus on today is the last, I called it the calendar year. It's incorrect. Calendar year, January through December. But when I think of calendar year, it's the last 12 months on the calendar. So I've changed it to what is the best single day for the Jacksonville Jaguars franchise in the last 12 months of their existence. And, you know, I'm not going to limit it to any options. It could be anything, because when I started to put calendar year, people said the day it ended. Get that one out of our memory and move on to the next one. You know, whether it's the day they hired Tom Coughlin, got rid of Gus Bradley, brought in Leonard Fournette, signed a bunch of guys in free agency, beat the Tennessee Titans, the hated Tennessee Titans. You don't have a lot of victories to choose from there. Whatever day you think stood out to you as the feel-good day of the last 12 months, we'll discuss that a little bit today. I asked you, what did I miss other than minicamp? Obviously, minicamp is an important deal for the Jags. I think the thing, the two things, and I think we touched on them when I got a chance to speak with you over the last couple days, Tony. Obviously, the status of Jalen Ramsey, and will he be ready for training camp? All indications are that he will be.
Mm-hmm.
But you hate to hear about a surgery at this point in the offseason for any reason. You know, a core muscle issue. I suppose it's an abdominal with a sports hernia. I don't know this. You know, the particulars of it, but hopefully
nobody does.
Right,
except Jalen.
It's something that he quickly overcomes and is not something that's going to keep him out of anything during training camp. But beyond that, assuming he's going to be all right, I think the return of Brandon Albert and just the fact that he's going to be here playing football, I don't care if his feelings are hurt. I don't care if the team's feelings are. I don't care about feelings. Like, Doug Marrone doesn't care about feelings. I don't need to redevelop some bond with Brandon Albert. I don't need to develop some bond with Brandon Albert. I need to coach Brandon Albert. Brandon Albert needs to play up to the best of his ability. And it gives me hope that this offensive line can be, I don't know what the adjective to use, whether it's significantly improved or what, but I guess that's it. You know, it needs to be significantly improved. And you bring in a two-time Pro Bowl tackle, you expect him to upgrade. You brought him in for a reason. Before you knew you're going to have Cam Robinson fall into your lap, I think both of those guys end up starting. We've said this all along. But the fact that he's in now, it's not a wonder in the back of your mind. He'll be here for training camp. They'll have the opportunity to spend the month of August basically deciphering who the best five offensive line, what combination works best for them.
Yeah, you wish he had been here for the last month so that you could get a head start on that, if nothing else, because now you go into training camp and look, if Cam Robinson's not going to be the left tackle for this football team, then he's going to be playing a position he's never played in his life somewhere else on the offensive line in the NFL. I mean, that's basically what you're asking from a guy like Cam Robinson. I'm not saying that we haven't seen guys do that and be successful doing that before. We have, but you are still asking somebody to do something he's never done before, potentially after a couple weeks of practice in training camp. You could have at least gotten a look at it for the last month, whether it's in pads or not. But you didn't get that opportunity with Brandon Albert. The other interesting thing with Albert to me was, and we talked about this the early part of last week when this was really a story, Mike, was I can't remember a guy that plays that premium a position at that high a level, is a left tackle that has played it at a Pro Bowl, All-Pro level, that has been tossed around the way Brandon Albert has the last 5 years. I can't remember a guy like that being like used like that. Like, it's, I can understand completely him needing another month, you know, to get his head in the right space right now, because I just, the left tackle position is still a premium position in this league. And then guy played it at a Pro Bowl level for the Kansas City Chiefs, and they decided to draft the guy number one overall. and replace him there with Eric Fisher. He goes to Miami. He's playing at a Pro Bowl level in Miami, and they decide, well, we're going to draft a guy. Now, the opportunity fell in their laps to draft Laremy Tunsil, so that may have not been the plan going into last year's draft, but it's the way things fell eventually for the Miami Dolphins. And here's a guy who's a Pro Bowl left tackle going, what is going on? So then he winds up in Jacksonville a day before he's going to hit free agency, so he doesn't get any of that money in a contract, and then they draft the future left tackle. Potentially. I can completely understand from Albert's perspective just going, what the heck is going on with me and my career and doing what he did. I mean, he missed the voluntary portion of the offseason. It's really no big deal. It just sets behind the progress of let's figure out what we're going to do with this offensive line for probably a week, week and a half, maybe 2 weeks going into training.
I don't even know if it sets it back that far, honestly. The way Doug Marrone described the benefit of what they were getting out of that stuff. You know, it's not football. It's not practice, especially on the offensive line. Yeah, you could see guys moving next to each other. Brandon Albert's been around long enough. I don't think he's going to have a problem acclimating to a new set of teammates. But you're right. It's a weird set of circumstances. I think the year the Eric Fisher draft, such a bad draft class, right, that the tackles – and not to be revisionist historians, I mean, Luke Jokel was in play for the number one overall pick. That's kind of where the draft class was. The value seemed to be at a premium position at the left tackle position. Even if they weren't as great as left tackles of the past, they were the best of the bunch coming out that year. And Kansas City takes one, trying to get the best value, and they play him at right tackle for a year. And then they figure, you know, I guess, well, let's not spend all this money on, I don't know what they were thinking, you know, in moving him to Miami, because Eric Fisher's just an average player.
And maybe it's something with Brandon Albert, you know,
maybe
we
it
just
is.
Don't know.
Maybe it
and
is.
And he hasn't been here. It's not like I'm paying attention to the daily grind in Kansas City and Miami when it comes to the offensive line.
But like you said, Tunsil falls into the lap of the Miami Dolphins. They can't know that's going to happen. What would have been more interesting was if he had been selected in the top 10 as he was expected to be, would they have gone for one of the other tackles that were available in what was a pretty good tackle class?
Who knows?
And then, you know, you draft that guy, you want to feature him at what you think is going to be his ultimate long-term position, and so that's what they did. But yeah, to send a 32-year-old, 32 is not terribly old in the National Football League. You consider the contract that Andrew Whitworth got leaving Cincinnati to go out to San Diego this offseason. He got big money at the age of 35. So, hey, you know, regardless, I think he's an upgrade clearly over what the Jags have had. So to me, that was the most significant development when I was gone. Not that it was a wholly unexpected one, but you like to see it come to pass anyway. You want to get in on part of the program today, and thanks to everybody who filled in for me over the last week, by the way. Hopefully none of them did it too well, Tony.
We had fun.
They let me back in the door, so I guess it's okay as far as that goes. Hit us up on Twitter today at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony. Also on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, 641-1010, the phone number, also the number for the text line as driven by Duval Ford. You can hit us up there if you want to weigh in on the question of the day or any other aspect of Jaguar or NFL football. And always pick up the phone and give us a call at that number, 641-1010. What is the best single day in the last 12 months for the Jacksonville Jaguars franchise is the main theme of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. Back in the saddle with Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. Jaguars Today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday, live at EverBank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, settling back in. I like it. Ride a bike, Tony. Get back on. Run my mouth. It's not like I've stopped running my mouth over the last week and a half. I just haven't done it as much in front of a microphone. Did do a couple of shows. Took my vacation between shows on Sirius. Did my Saturday night show. We left Sunday morning to go to Tennessee. Drove up there a week or so, week and a half ago, and was back by, I think, Thursday night, and did my Saturday night show. Went up to New York for the draft. So getting a little bit of work done.
Yeah.
In the meantime.
A little bit.
Just a smidge.
Yeah. How was Tennessee?
Tennessee was awesome. Tennessee was fantastic.
Dollywood?
You know, we checked our shoes at the border, which was nice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're on vacation. You don't really need shoes anyway. They're like, what are those things? we didn't go to the Dollywood, you know, the main theme park or whatever. Mm-hmm. We went to the water park. Cause I don't, you know, roller coasters, forget it. G-forces and me. Never the twain shall meet if I can help it at this point in my life. Water park was awesome. Hiking in the mountains in the Smokies was awesome. We love hiking. For a kid that loves his electronics. I'm talking about my son, Colin, who'll be 13. Oh, I'm going to have a teenager in 9 days, dude.
Good luck.
I'm going to have a teenager in 9 days. He's such a nice kid. Is the switch going to flip? He loves to climb things. And
cool, yeah.
Otherwise, the most sedentary kid. You know, he plays soccer grudgingly. Right?
That's about it.
But he'll climb some rocks. If he sees rocks going up or down, he wants to be on them and go. So we did some of that and went whitewater rafting. That was a blast. Who does enjoy that, too? Especially when you sit up front. We quickly volunteered for the front row.
Oh, heck yeah.
It's the only place to be, in the boat.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what are you doing?
If you're going to be in the boat, baby.
Right. So it was fun. It was good. I actually probably ate less and exercised more on vacation than I typically do at home. So that was good.
That's probably not the way it's going to work for me when I go on vacation.
Probably not. That's okay, though. Watch a little U.S. Open, and on we go. Looking forward to getting back on the golf course with FanCam and to continue the First Coast Golf Tour.
Oh, yeah.
We played the Friday before I left. We played at Hyde Park. I'd never played there before. Hogan's Alley. Hogan took an 11 on one of the par threes there in the Greater Jacksonville Open.
Yeah.
I made a par.
Yeah.
So there, Ben Hogan, you're dead. And I outshot you by 8 strokes. Okay? How you feel about that, right? Talking smack to dead Ben Hogan. While we were gone, I was gone. Tony wasn't gone. He may have mentally checked out. I think he was.
I was engaged.
By the way, you from all accounts, I came back just in time because it was going to become the Fat Tony Show. All right? It was this close. It was this close. But no, seriously, kudos. I know how good you are. I don't worry about that. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, Tony did a great job. Like, what do you expect? He does a great job every freaking day.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. And Ben Hogan's still dead. anyway, Doug Marrone had this message to the fans. Let's hear what he had to say.
We're going to have to earn the fans' respect by being on that field and winning football games at home and getting them back in here and getting everyone with Jaguar gear on and going out there and having a true home field advantage and kicking the crap out of somebody and then celebrating like rock stars afterwards.
How do you earn that?
You win.
It's the only way to win, right?
Yes.
The only way to earn it is to win.
No doubt.
You can't earn that. There's nothing you can do between now and September 10th, I think, whatever the date, between now and the Houston Texan game. When that you can, and certainly that's a road game, so you have the great opportunity to go on the road, win a road divisional game against the defending division champions, and at least earn the thought process of, hey, maybe this will be something new. The reason I bring that up is because one of the first responses we got to the question of the day this morning about the best day of the last 12 months was from BCB Couch on Twitter. He said the day before the Bengals preseason game last year was the best day of the last 12 months because it's the last day we all still thought this was a good team. And that's depressing, right? But I can understand that. That's kind of the reality. And I was driving in this morning thinking about a number of things. Like, do we have reason to believe that this is – are we going to get sucked into optimism once again for 2017?
I'll say that – I'm not saying that guy is wrong necessarily on Twitter, that's what killed it. I think that it took a serious punch in the gut against Cincinnati. If they had converted that drive against Green Bay,
you would have felt, you would have forgotten that preseason.
Who cares about week three of the preseason? Like the week three of the preseason became a bigger deal because of what they did once we got into the regular season. And it's going to happen this year. When you talk about the prospect of going to Houston and winning that game and then coming back against Tennessee in week two, whatever happens in preseason, if they go to Houston week one and win a football game, and they're coming back home against Tennessee week two with the opportunity to go 2-0 against the two teams that everyone's been talking about winning the AFC South
right
to start the season, the hype will be real in Jacksonville going into week two if they go beat Houston in week one. The momentum will be there because it is the beginning of a new season. Whatever you felt about what they did in preseason won't matter if they're 1-0 when they come back home against Tennessee.
Yeah, and to me, like, I understand what the tweeter is saying about that. Like, he felt like maybe things were exposed a little bit. But didn't you feel grudgingly better? I know you don't feel great anytime you lose as a fan base. But in terms of going toe-to-toe with what we thought was a really good Packer team and being a play away, basically, from winning that football game.
Sure.
To me, it was the San Diego game that let all the air out of the balloon.
San Diego was done.
Right. And you could talk about their poor track record against San Diego and going out west and all this stuff. It just to have that happen on the heels of a good losing performance. You can have a good performance in a loss, and they had one for the most part against the Packers. Certainly a competitive performance. Again, you lose, it's not great, but that's the one that took all the wind out of the sails. And I was driving in this morning thinking, you know, how I'm not going to allow myself to be more optimistic. On paper, I think there are reasons to be more optimistic. If you go position by position, is this team better or worse than they were last year? I think you'll find yourself saying they shouldn't be worse at almost any position on paper going into 2017.
No, shouldn't be. I mean, it depends on how you felt about Julius Thomas at tight end going into last season, right? And I think
good point.
You still expected Thomas to be a playmaker for this team going throughout the offseason last year. I had this conversation a little bit with JP yesterday when he was filling in for you, and I'm going to remind myself daily that whatever I want to take away from training camp and preseason, eventually it means nothing. Like, I need to remind myself in June that what I'm going to see in July and early August really doesn't matter when it comes to what's going to happen in the regular season. We felt really good about this football team throughout the summer last year, going into training camp through the first couple weeks of preseason when it looked like Blake still had it. Like, you could see it there. And then the Cincinnati game came and you were like, well, maybe they just got, you know, punched a little bit by a team that's been in the playoffs over and over and over again for the past, you know, 7-8 years. That's just a really good football team. They know where they are a little bit more right now than Jacksonville. It's a preseason game.
And right, you can excuse a lot of things in preseason.
Week before the preseason, who cares? And then you get to the game against Green Bay, and it's like they went toe-to-toe with a team that a lot of people expect maybe to win the NFC this year. You know?
Maybe felt like you should have won that game.
Yeah.
And in part because of a blown call by the refs late in that game that should have given the Jags a first and goal. And an admitted blown call by the National Football League.
So, like, I'm looking at it saying, I'm not going to buy into any of the hype. You know, I'm trying to convince myself that I will not buy into any of the hype that's going to happen over the course of the next month and a half. It just will. It's.
Where do you think the hype comes from where, though? Whose hype is it?
It's the hope of a new season. I mean, that's honestly, and it's,
but hope or hype?
It's this thing that happens, and it's going on in 32 fan bases across the league right now. Whatever you've done in this offseason, the assumption from a majority of the fans is going to be that that move is going to work out as well as it possibly could. There's nothing wrong with doing that. As a fan, have fun with it, right? Like, I'm not trying to trounce anybody at all right now, but that's the way it works, is you assume the best of whatever you did, right? Like, Leonard Fournette is going to be a 1,500-yard back, and he's going to be a guy that the offense can rely on. There's a lot of fans that are counting on that for this team to get into it offensively this season, so they're not going to think about what happens if it doesn't work that way with Leonard Fournette, and I don't blame them for not wanting to, but there's probably a middle ground where it's actually going to settle. For a lot of teams in the NFL, that's what's going to happen. There's going to be that handful of teams. Look, New England, before the season, before they roll a ball out, they're a 10-win football team, right? And they probably have a pretty good idea
maybe
that that's
more,
what they're going to be.
Honestly.
Right. But there's a handful of teams that are like that. And then there's a bunch of teams that are kind of, well, maybe we're an 8-8 football team, and wherever things settle, maybe they wind up being 6-10. Maybe they wind up being 10-6. For the Jaguars' sake, I hope it settles there in the middle, that they are an 8-8 football team and that Blake Bortles takes that step forward that we all want to see him take in 2017. But the assumption from the fans is going to be that he's going to.
And you think so? I don't know. I think there's a lot of skepticism as to whether that's going to happen. I think there's a
more than usual.
There's a percentage of the fan base that has moved on mentally. Like, they're waiting for that being the last piece that they need to finally find a quarterback. And it's probably good that Blake is going to spend time on the West Coast instead of here this summer, because until training camp comes, and even in training camp, what can he show you in training camp that's going to convince you of anything? I don't think it's possible to do that. He's never been a great practice player, so if he goes out there and lights it up consistently, you'll be a little encouraged by it. But I think I don't know what the number is, but there's a vocal percentage of the fan base that is just going to be waiting for the other shoe to drop and is convinced that they're never going anywhere as long as he's a signal caller here. They may be right, but they've almost given up hope. At least 99% of their mentality has given up hope. Maybe in the deep recesses of their mind, they're doing that as a defense mechanism, and they don't want to get their hopes up, and they, in the back of their mind, they still have a tiny glimmer.
Right.
But
I think that's kind of the thing. I think even those of a majority of even those fans when they see something that they can hold on to, will. Like, I just think that's the way that being a fan works. It's, there's a point where you can be honest with yourself, and maybe right now is that point, but once they get on the field, if he shows you something, anything, you're going to want to hold on to that. Like, that's just the way that it naturally works. I don't disagree with you that there's a lot of fans that are pessimistic about what Blake Bortles is going to be, but if he does light it up in training camp, and if he does light it up through the first couple preseason games, there's going to be a lot of those fans that right now are very pessimistic about Blake that are be going, well, maybe we've actually got something here. Like, it's going
that's
to
possible.
Happen.
It's possible. But, all right, that's hope, though. Who's hyping this team? When fans are enthusiastic about their team, I suppose you can hype your team on social media and things like that. When I think of hype, I think more from the media point of view, right? What expectations are going to be for this football team, even nationally? You know, it swung. I think some people got ahead of the Jaguar curve last year, and maybe they feel burned a little bit. And what you hear about Leonard Fournette is, yeah, but he's going to a team that can't crack an egg at the goal line and have terrible offensive line issues. And, well, yeah, there's a reason they drafted him, in part because they couldn't crack an egg at the goal line. You know, was it the lack of rushing touchdown opportunities? Was it the running backs that they had weren't good enough to convert the ones that they did have? Was it a general overall imbalance in the offense that didn't provide them with enough? Did they throw too much at the goal line? As Tom Coughlin said when they drafted Leonard Fournette, you're here to score touchdowns, young man. And I think Leonard Fournette is going to score. I do. I believe if he plays 16 games, he'll score double-digit touchdowns for his football team. Doesn't guarantee them an 8-8 record or a playoff berth or anything like that. But I am of the mind that if they don't suffer a devastating wave of injuries up front, that Leonard Fournette's going to have a successful rookie year, and he's going to be in the running for the rookie of the year, because offensively, you put up numbers. An offensive lineman's not going to win rookie of the year. You're going to have be a running back or a wide receiver or a tight end, very likely, unless one of the quarterbacks comes in and wins 10 games, something like that. That's not going to be as statistically driven for that position, but I don't know. Even if Deshaun Watson's going to start enough games to be considered the primary quarterback for the Houston Texans this year, that's still to be determined. You want to get in 641-1010. Today, we discuss, among other things, the best single day for the Jaguar franchise in the last 12 months, this being the first day of summer. It's a time of new beginnings and rebirth and all that stuff, man. It's been hot enough to be summer for a while now. So we'll discuss what we think are some of the candidates, some of the nominees for the best day in Jaguar franchise history of the last 12 months, at least, that is. Since the first day of summer of 2016 until now, what's the best single day that this franchise has had? Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony Ware, live at EverBank, and you can be a part of the program at 641-1010. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Kicking the crap out of somebody and then celebrating like rock stars afterwards.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at EverBank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, I feel welcome back now officially, as on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, Tony, in response to asking people the best day of the last 12 months for the Jaguars franchise. Connor said he was on the fence between the day that Daly's Place held their first event versus the day when I left for vacation. So between those two, I'm kind of torn as well. Those are two of my favorite days as well, Connor. So thank you for that. By the way, our weekly dose of Daly's Place coming up in about 20 minutes or so, 25 minutes. And we'll tell you some new concerts being announced, including a second rap act coming in. And they are just filling up the calendar with
they're starting to announce the dates, I guess, for the Saturdays or the night before games.
Yes,
because they got the first one that we'll be talking about here in about 25 minutes.
Yes, they do. We will do that coming up shortly. This Dayton football and the Honda drive around the NFL ahead as well. David Harris has reached a 2-year agreement with
joining the dark side,
the New England Patriots. He's still got football left in him. He was a good player for the New York Jets, one of the cast-offs in the purge to try to acquire the rights to potentially Sam Darnold, I believe, in next year's NFL draft, one of those quarterbacks. It will be, I'm pretty convinced now, Sam Darnold will be heading back to USC. Trojan fans rejoice if the Jets earn the number one pick, because much like they were in position to draft Peyton Manning had he come out as a junior, when he would have been the number one pick then, Instead, they got Keyshawn Johnson, a nice player.
Sure.
Not generation-defining quarterback.
Yeah, not quite the NFL impact that Peyton Manning had on a couple of franchises.
No. So how about this? The Patriots now, just from the AFC East alone, right? David Harris from the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
They had already stolen Chris Hogan from the Bills, and they followed up with getting Stephon Gilmore and Mike Gillisley this offseason. That's four guys that will likely be significant factors for them. Obviously, Brady's the biggest factor in that whole mix up there, but they will poach. And I wonder what the terms are on that. You didn't hear David Harris's name mentioned with a lot of interest out there. And who knows if he got many calls or whatever. So I don't know if the Patriots were bidding against anybody. But they're not the type to outbid very often. Maybe they did for Stephon Gilmore, but that's more of a premium position than an inside linebacker like David Harris has been. So there you have it. The rich get richer. And, I mean, they're in total win-now mode. Tom Brady could say he wants to play for the next 5 or 10 years. You know, sometimes he says he wants to play to at least 50. He wants to play another 5 years. And you watch his performance in the Super Bowl, and you can believe that if he can stay healthy, that he can. Right? I mean, he's at such a high level right now. He had arguably the greatest game of his career in the Super Bowl. Probably was the greatest game of his career in the Super Bowl.
Certainly the best half.
Right. But when you look at the bottom line numbers of what he put up, it was among the best performances he's ever put out there. And, you know, he's 40 years old. The question is, how long will he stay healthy?
Yeah.
Will his body break down, or will he take that one shot that nobody can anticipate, but the shot that when you're 40 takes you a lot more to recover from than when you were 25 years old?
Yeah, I mean, Tom Brady is incredible. And you go back and look at his career numbers. I think he obviously got hurt the first game of the year in 2008, and that's when Matt Castle came in. But I believe this is correct, that Tom Brady has never won less than 10 games as a starter, except for one season. I think that was 2002. The Patriots went 9-7.
His second year, he won 9-7, and that was the year he led the NFL in touchdown passes with 28, believe it or not. It was 28 that led the league, because I remember that in the argument of Brady v. Manning. You know, that Brady, the argument early on was Brady was a winner, more so than Peyton. Peyton won a lot of regular season games. Brady was clutch in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
But he couldn't put up the numbers of Peyton Manning. And part of the argument for Brady was, well, you know, the one year he didn't make the playoffs, he did lead the league in touchdown passes. And I believe Peyton Manning was playing that year. So, man, what a 28.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. And Tom Brady has only been selected as an all-pro quarterback twice. That is maddening. Like, and I get there's been some good quarterbacks in the league, but only twice he's been selected?
And people say, well, look at what he does in the postseason. All that voting is done based on regular season performance.
No doubt.
Right? And you live in an era, and only one all-pro quarterback, right, in the entire league. So there's not one from each conference. You live in an era, or play in an era, with Peyton Manning having ridiculous numbers in the regular season. Drew Brees became the first, you know, the first guy to have multiple 5,000-yard passing seasons, and he's done it several times. Aaron Rodgers is still arguably the best player in the league right now. So it's kind of like Fred Taylor with the Pro Bowl. He only made one Pro Bowl in his career, but look at every year, if you take it individually. And I've done this before. We should do this at some point now that we've got some downtime on the official beginning of summer, and compare Fred's best seasons and who kept him out of the Pro Bowls in that year. Was it the market? There probably was some influence in that. He wasn't going to win too many tiebreakers, but you look at the guys, the crop around him, and Clinton Portis and Larry Johnson and Edgerrin James and Terrell Davis and different guys at different times, Priest Holmes, and we could probably go on and on. And it was just a set of circumstances. LaDainian Tomlinson, the AFC was loaded with great running backs, at least guys that had great seasons in Fred's prime. So
no, they were. And Peyton Manning was selected as the first team all-pro quarterback 7 times in his career. Tom Brady twice. I can look up Drew Brees real quick.
And again, that's on numbers. You know, that's really what that is. And I would imagine, I wouldn't be surprised Aaron Rodgers was a couple of times as well. And Brees.
Yeah, and it's like when you look at Peyton and Brady, it's not like either one of them are undeserving of being you know, first team All-Pro. They're both fantastic players, right? And they were both leading their teams to 12, 13 wins a year, and the statistics were unbelievable from both of them, and they picked one every year, and it seemed like most of the time they were just going the other way.
Well, the stats generally favored Peyton Manning. Yeah. I mean, how many MVPs has Tom Brady won?
I don't know. Let me look.
I imagine he won it in 2007, right, when he threw...
I can't imagine he didn't.
He threw 50 touchdowns that year. Outside of that, I don't know if he's won another MVP award.
He's got two MVPs.
Okay, he has two. 2007, does it have the years listed?
It does not, but I can find
And Manning's
that.
Won what, like five?
Something like that.
Right, which prior to that, I think three was the all-time record for MVPs, at least in the modern era.
2010.
2010 was the second MVP for Brady.
Won
all right,
the MVP.
So he won a couple. You know, again, you're playing against the entire field, and the MVP is a regular season award.
2010, Tom Brady went 14-2, completed 65.9% of his passes, only 3,900 yards for 36 touchdowns and four picks.
How many games did he play that year? Did he play them all?
He played them all.
36
touchdowns
four.
And four picks.
Aaron Rodgers has those kind of years,
yeah,
too.
Brady last year was 28-2.
And touchdowns to pay, and that was
in
12 games. Right.
28 to 2.
28 in 12 games. So at that pace, you know, another four games. It's still ridiculous that he led the league with 28 touchdown passes. I mean, it's becoming more and more. And practically, he almost doubled it, but Peyton Manning practically doubled it by setting the record with 55, not 10 years later, right? I mean, what was the year Manning? It's right around that time because they were going back and forth. Maybe it was a little over 10 years later when they went to the Super Bowl and got whacked by the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, it might have been. I'm looking at Aaron Rodgers now, a couple of All-Pro picks. He's won the MVP twice, six-time Pro Bowler, obviously won the Super Bowl the 1 year. The numbers for Rodgers are just as silly. I mean, he's only led the league in touchdown passes once in his career. That was last season when he threw 40 to go with seven interceptions. The guy hadn't thrown... double-digit interception since 2010 when he threw 28 and 11 that year. And the next season in 2011 when he was selected as the All-Pro quarterback, 45 touchdowns to 6 interceptions.
45 and 6.
45 to 6.
I mean, 28 to 2 is a better ratio, but to play it out and have that kind of productivity.
Yeah, last year he was 40 and 7.
You'd take either one of those seasons. How many Pro Bowls or All-Pro listings for Joe Montana, would you say? I got it right in front of me.
I'll go three.
Wouldn't you say prior to the Manning-Brady duo, Montana would have won most polls as the best quarterback of all time?
Yeah.
Based on the rings, and they felt he was more instrumental. Even though Terry Bradshaw was a two-time Super Bowl MVP, they felt Montana was more instrumental in his team's success. It was more about the steel curtain defense for the Pittsburgh Steelers. You're right. He made it to three All-Pro teams, and you think about, hey, Joe freaking Montana,
right?
I mean, and you look at some of the numbers that he put up, particularly, man, 70.2 completion percentage back in 1989. That's an 89 when, you know, the rules have been added to time and again in terms of how physical you can be with wide receivers. And the more we get closer to the modern era, I mean, 89 is not ancient history, but the closer you get to 2017, the more liberal it gets for the offenses. 70% completion percentage back in the day was pretty ridiculous for Montana. But if you look at his yardage totals, Joe Montana never threw for 4,000 yards in a single season, ever. Not once. Different game, you know. Didn't need to. He was high 3,000s, ran the ball, super efficient. Joe Montana threw for 30 touchdowns once in his entire career, and when he did, he threw 13 picks to offset 31 touchdowns. Montana was a double-digit interception guy. Listen to these numbers for Montana. This is when he was going to the Pro Bowl in 81. 19-12 for Montana. Touchdown interception ratio. 17-11, 26-12, 28-10, 27-13, 8-9. He got injured and didn't play the full season, or maybe that was a strike-shortened season. But 8-9 for Joe Montana. You thought he might be done. He bounces back 31-13, 18-10, 26-8, 26-16, it's very difficult just to compare raw statistics across the decades.
And if you're looking at raw numbers, especially there in the 80s, I'm sure Dan Marino was dominating.
Well, I mean, in 84 is when he set the record with 48 touchdown passes, which was so obscene. It was like Bob Beamon's long jump in Mexico City in 1968. It was one of those records that was so lapped the field. It was Babe Ruth hitting 60 home runs or, you know, posting his career home run totals. It was things that no one had touched, although Ruth was close. You know, that's probably not even a good example. Beamon took the existing long jump record and added like 2 feet to it or something absurd. I don't know what but it was such a quantum leap ahead. It's what Marino did in 1984. That's why that season still stands. You could argue it's the greatest quarterback season of all time. I mean, Peyton Manning threw 55. He holds the record. That's fantastic. Could he have done that in 1984? Maybe he could have. But Marino did do it in 1984. Pretty ridiculous stuff. All right. Coming up, we do have this date in football and the Honda drive around the NFL. And we'll get into a little bit our own personal nominees. I mean, there's certainly some obvious days that leap to mind. Wish there were more. It's so maddening that when you talk about on-field success for the Jags, that really you can only boil it down to, for the most part, one day, the game against the Tennessee Titans last year. I mean, they won two other games, and that was by far the most impressive performance against a team that looked like they were headed to the postseason. You knock out their quarterback against the hated rival, all those things, but it's the one clear-cut day. Don't you want to have this conversation a year from now and try to decide between their 9 or 10 victories and the great fourth quarter performances and Leonard Fournette, that time he ran for 250 and 3 touchdowns and all... Where's that? Well, a lot of this stuff is off the field. And unfortunately, a lot of it is just dealing with change.
Yeah.
Weren't getting it done. You change out the coach. Yeah. You put in the new coach. That was a result of Doug Marrone's first game. And man, if they could have followed that up and held that lead against Indy, maybe you'd feel differently, at least, more optimistic if they were able to finish with both of those victories and really show that there was something about just the attitude change and learning to win, but they backslid in the second half against the Colts. And then you got the change with Tom Coughlin. You got fresh players coming in, which you get every year. But I've got to, you know, you talk about, obviously, the New England Patriots. You know what the answer is. They won the Super Bowl. But good teams, you would think, who has more easily definable good days and best days to look at? Because if you're a team, if you're an 8-8 team, what are your best days? You know, if it's status quo, you know what I mean? You win 8 games, okay, and maybe you look at, hey, we won that game by 21 points, something like that. I don't know. But we'll get into that. If you want to get into it, you're certainly welcome to. It's our social media question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. Hit us up on Twitter or on Facebook or on the text line, for that matter, driven by Duval Ford at 641-1010. The best day for the Jaguar franchise in the last 12 months. Back with this date in football, the Honda drive around the NFL, and your weekly dose of Daly's Place, telling you about something new on the concert schedule. All that and more coming up right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Oh, it's birthday season, Tony. Mm-hmm. Happy first day of summer. Happy birthday to a Fletcher High product, Coop. The Coopaloop was famous at Florida State University in the 1990s as a wide receiver. Andre Cooper, he turns 42 years old today. In 95, caught 71 balls for 1,002 yards and a ridiculous 15 touchdowns for the Florida State Seminoles as a junior. Came back, never had much of a long career in the National Football League, but well, fondly remembered by Florida State fans who watched the team and followed the team in the 1990s. Also, with the pride of the Tennessee Volunteers, Al Wilson made 5 Pro Bowls. His final Pro Bowl came at the age of 29. Spent his entire career with the Denver Broncos. Never played again in the National Football League. Al Wilson got a neck injury with about a month to go in the season, right? He came out of the game, missed a little time, would go on to play 3 more games that season for the Denver Broncos. Officially got medically cleared, and I went back and looked, said at the time, absolutely wanted to continue his career and all that. Got just minimal interest and had a veteran minimum offer from one team in the National Football League that he turned down, and a year later announced his retirement. And they're probably, you know, skeptical, even though he had officially been cleared. You get a neck injury, they probably didn't want that happening on their watch. Al Wilson, five-time Pro Bowler and a one-time first-team All-Pro. Half the times that Tom Brady has made it, he is 40 years old today. You're born in the state in 1977. This Dayton football presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, conveniently located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done or you're just in the market for a family dentist, you can call Dr. McCall's office and set up an appointment at 620-9225. In the meantime, visit jamesjmccall.com. Get a complete list of his comprehensive care services. That was this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Former New York Jets linebacker David Harris has decided to join the enemy. Harris has spent his entire 10-year career with the Jets, but was cut by the team a couple of weeks ago. He has agreed to a 2-year deal with the New England Patriots. Reportedly, they offered him more money than the Jets did. We'll get more details in the coming days. The date for O.J. Simpson's parole hearing has been set. Simpson will appear before a 4-person parole panel on July 20th to determine whether or not he will be released from prison in October. Simpson has served over 8 years after being found guilty in an armed kidnapping at a Las Vegas casino that took place in 2007. Simpson was sentenced to a 9-to-30-year prison term, has served over 8 years of that thus far. He turned 70 in July.
Could you put that out of your mind? Could you put his prior alleged misdeeds out of your mind?
Could I?
Yes.
No.
You think they can find a parole board that can do that? I wonder.
Maybe.
I can't believe OJ's going to get on parole.
Not with everything that I know.
And I'm not saying that in a society of laws that's even the right outcome, but I can't believe that he's going to be
left. I seriously doubt it. 2014 first-round pick Justin Gilbert, likely done in the NFL. After the latest news has him suspended for 1 year for violating the NFL's substance abuse policy, Gilbert was selected 8th overall by the Cleveland Browns in 2014, spent 2 underwhelming seasons with the Browns before being traded to the Pittsburgh Steelers last year, where he recorded just 3 tackles in a season before being released in February. He is currently still a free agent. Jarvis Landry and his camp in Miami are apparently okay with the potential specter of a long-term extension looming over him during training camp in the preseason, but they have drawn the line with the start of the regular season. Demarius Bilbo, who is Landry's agent, said yesterday, "We don't want every game to be about a new contract."
Demarius Bilbo. That's a real guy.
That's the guy's name.
That is awesome.
It's not Lord of the Rings. Jason Taylor, who will be inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame later this year, announced yesterday on social media that he has selected his former head coach Jimmy Johnson to present him at the ceremony. Johnson was the coach who drafted Taylor in the 3rd round of the 97 NFL draft coming out of Akron. And Baltimore Ravens wide receiver Jeremy Maclin went on the Know Them From Adam podcast with Adam Schefter yesterday and revealed that he played through a torn groin in the 2016 season with Kansas City. Before now, we knew that Maclin had suffered some sort of groin injury in Week 9 last season that kept him out for 4 weeks, and he was not productive when he came back. Maclin also told Schefter that the injury didn't require surgery, that he feels like he is back to 100%, and that is the Honda Drive Around the NFL.
And now, a dose of Daly's Place.
Man, Gibby's got the show just running smoothly today, doesn't he? Hello, Agent Gibbs. How are you, man? All right. He thought I really wanted to talk to him. He was wrong. I could hear him go,
I thought you were going to ask me, how you doing today? I'm doing
fine.
How
you doing, Gibby?
I'm doing fine.
Are you good?
Outside of the fact
that... Did you miss me while I was gone? I missed you more than
anyone. Of course. Outside of the fact I washed my phone this morning, so that's why I told you my phone is out of commission today.
Oh, you washed it?
Yeah, I got home late last night, just threw clothes in the washer, and didn't even hear the phone go in. And
you got home late last night from where?
Hacker After Dark.
Oh, okay. So it was like a work... It wasn't like...
It was work, yeah.
Okay, not like in a mentally compromised state, Tony, where he threw his phone in the washer.
No.
All right, Gibby. Good to talk to you, Gibby. We're going to spend some time with our man, David Altman, Director of Sales and the Chief Cook and Bottle Washer for Daly's Place. When we talk, the weekly dose of Daly's Place. What's going on?
How are we doing?
I'm good. I'm not tan, but I'm somewhat rested, and I'm ready, back from vacation. So ready to find out about new shows being booked, and we thought we were going to scoop everybody.
You guys have been busting my chops. I tried to push up the segment this morning. You guys are just, you're very busy, so I wanted to try to announce a show. We announced Future this morning, our second big rap show, which is going to go on still in the next few days. And then we'll continue to go from there. It's our 30th show we've announced so far. We're going to announce at least another 9 more with the Saturday concert series going off before every home game. So we're still rocking and rolling.
So you got Meek Mill on July 22nd, and then Future will be at sometime in August during the middle of training camp. Do we have a specific date for him?
I do not have a specific date in front of me, but I believe it's around the 18th.
All right, somewhere around the 18th, somewhere around mid-August.
It's the night before the first home preseason game, right? Is that what I was reading?
I think so. Then that would, I think that puts us at the 16th.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I think that's what I saw.
Near the 18th. Yeah. It's in that ballpark. If you want to see Future, you know, you'll log out, you'll find a way. Go to dailiesplace.com and you'll get all the details of the specific date.
Exactly.
Right.
Dailiesplace.com, Twitter, Instagram. Call me.
I've missed a lot of shows since I've been gone. What has drawn the most rave reviews of the recent performances?
You know, my personal favorite was Third Eye Blind.
Is that right?
They played the full initial album 20-year anniversary front to back, and it was killer.
Good.
And you know, I mean, we're rolling into a busy week coming up. I mean, we're starting off Saturday with Rise Against and Deftones. A couple days later, rolling right into Diana Ross and Dan TDM, and then Chicago Doobie Brothers. So we got a really full docket coming up over the next week.
All right, I'm not familiar with Dan TDM. Give me a little lowdown on.
So Dan TDM actually is a gamer, and it's a show that comes to us from the UK, and he's very big over there. He's coming to do a tour over here, and he gets up on stage and is very interactive with the audience. It's a younger crowd. Has his dog up there.
Plays, it's like an esports kind of
thing. Esports.
Mm-hmm. Esports is getting to be pretty big. I mean, I know people my age are like, what are you talking about? What are esports?
He's big in Minecraft. That's his that's his thing.
Competitive Minecraft?
I believe so.
Man, it's way beyond me. I mean, my kid played Minecraft. He went through the Minecraft phase for a year or two or however long it lasted, and he's moved on from that.
I still play. I'm building a giant, baseball stadium is my current project.
I'm trying to determine whether Batman Arkham Knights is, with its M rating, is acceptable for a teenager. That's what he's requested for his birthday. I don't know.
Batman.
It is Batman. Have you seen any of these Batman video games lately?
I have not.
Okay.
He's the Dark Knight.
Yeah. Harley Quinn in the Batman video games these days is as hot as anything that we tried to get our hands on with our father's copy of a gentleman's magazine back in the late 1970s. So times have changed. Let's just say that. The pixels have gotten more highly defined.
Fair enough.
There you go. All right. What else do we have going on with the Flex Field? Got to be done mid-July?
Mid-July. They've started to get the walls up around the Flex Field. The turf, I believe, is starting this week, so we'll start to see a lot of progress there. But you know, looking forward to having the players to get started in there.
Training camp coming up, man. It's going to be an exciting time.
Training camp schedule's announced. I think we've got 10 practices that are open to the general public. Come out, take a look, see what's going on the field for the 2017-18 season.
And come by and say hello to Tony and I. We will, I believe, be broadcasting live out at the practice field.
We'll be out there every day.
Everyone that's open to the public.
Yeah, I know you got Deftones Rise Against coming in this weekend.
Yep.
And a week from tonight is Diana Ross, correct? Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So you got our first big heavy act coming in, and the classic Diana Ross.
All right, dailiesplace.com. If you want more information, 633-2000. If you want tickets to any of these programs, right?
Exactly.
There you go.
We've still got some great premium seats. We rolled out some new options last week. We sold through the initial offering that we talked about for so long. So we've come up with some new stuff. So give us a call, 633-2000, and we'll get you guys set up.
All right. David Altman will take great care of you and everyone else as far as that goes, looking to go to Daily's Place. I'm going to finally settle. Journey will be my first show at Daily's Place. So
I got a guy if you need some tickets.
Do you? I've heard. Yeah, 633-2000. His name is D. Dot Altman. I'll be giving you a holler. I'm already set for Journey, but I will keep that in mind, and so should everybody else in the future. David, good to see you, buddy.
Great to see you guys.
All right, there he goes, our weekly dose of Daily's Place with David Altman. So now you know what's coming up. Future on the docket for mid-August, so check it out at dailiesplace.com. We come back. Tony and I, as promised, will run through some of our nominees for the best single day in the Jacksonville Jaguars franchise in the last 12 months, this being the first day of summer. Think back to all the optimism of last summer and what happened to that. What are the good days in between? What are the ones that really stand out? What single day stands out the most? Hit us up on social media, on Twitter, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL, Fat Tony on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. Also, check in on the text line at 641-1010, driven by Duval Ford. More Jaguars Today straight ahead, live from Everbank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Sweep the corners.
Now, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, Fortunato, in his infinite wisdom, has suggested at a future date on a much slower news day. Everyone else accuses us, we have a question they don't like of it being a slow news day, of playing off Gibby's washing of the phone. What is the weirdest thing you've ever washed? I don't know.
I like
it.
On
the phone. You like it, Gibby? Have you ever washed anything weird beyond that? I've washed all kinds of probably food items.
No, just money. That was not good.
Yeah, money. Money always gets washed. That's no big deal. I'm trying to think of things like.
Money always. Like I can remember, I did a load of laundry earlier this week where I'm opening up the dryer. And I'm like, oh, a quarter.
A quarter is a score, man.
It's like, this is great.
Any silver coin.
Yeah, like I don't know if this isn't really laundry. I know like a winter jacket. I can remember this years ago where, you put it away because we have, 2 weeks of winter here. So I put it back in the closet, and I'm putting it back on the next year, and I reach into the pockets, $20. I had $20 in one of the pockets. I was like, yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah. I hadn't even realized I'd lost it.
It's always nice when you find a stashed 10 or 20 somewhere, like an old something you haven't worn in a while.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't have a dryer when I was growing up. Not that, it's just we didn't, but we had a clothesline.
Yeah,
we had a clothesline, right? So when I went to college, it's the first experience I had using a dryer, and I didn't wash anything weird, but none of my shirts fit after that. I mean, the first go-round. At all these things, like I used to wear, in my head, I had some 80s fashion going on. I had all these nice long sleeve dress shirts I'd wear with my pants with suspenders and stuff like that. You can just picture height of 1980s absurdity.
Mm-hmm.
And all those shirts ended up having sleeves that came halfway down my forearm. It was a tragedy.
More like baseball shirts.
Tragedy. Yeah, like, exactly. Which I used to love, the baseball shirts.
The three-quarter sleeve.
That's not so you don't see that many baseball shirts anymore.
Not much.
With the three-quarter. Even on baseball players, you don't see the baseball shirt. You see other styles, but yeah, those used to be the thing.
They wear the short sleeves and the the stuff underneath, the compression stuff.
The compression underneath. Sleeves. Yeah. Yeah, it's all about the compression shirts. Now, I wear the compression shirts. I love me a good compression shirt. In lieu of covering my arms in suntan lotion when I'm out on the golf course, I will suffer through the heat, buddy. Let me tell you, in a compression shirt. All right, let's get to some of the nominees. Obviously, the day Tom Coughlin came back in the fold is a popular selection for the best day that the Jags have had in the last 12 months.
That was an up and down day where I can remember interacting with fans because it was announced earlier in the day that Doug Marrone was going to be promoted to the head coach. He was going to be the full-time head coach, and fans that were reacting with me were going nuts. They were just so upset that why did we waste our time last year? Blah 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 blah. Why didn't we install him earlier?
Right?
Yeah, like all this stuff, and I'm like, I hear you. I hear all this, and they're all very upset. And then Tom Coughlin going to be the EVP? Yes.
Yeah. For some, there's a segment out there that feels like, it's retread and you're trying to go back and you can't go back and recapture what you had the first time around.
But I think it was overwhelmingly positive.
I think so as well. And when you look at the free agents that they signed, the philosophy that they took in the draft, if Tom Coughlin, if they just never had come to terms and Dave Caldwell was the GM and Doug Marrone was the head coach working with him to influence the roster, would we have seen much different? Now, we heard that Calais Campbell, in large part, was attracted to the idea of going to a franchise headed by Tom Coughlin. Even though they never spoke during the free agent period, he singled that out as a factor in him coming here. But A.J. Boye, seems like A.J. Boye went to the highest bidder, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with that,
no.
By the way, when you're in your mid-20s and you're an ascending player and you have a chance to really strike it rich for
undrafted.
The first time. Exactly. Go to the highest bidder. Go make a bunch of money. There's time to ring chase later if it comes to that. But
you're allowed to win a ring here, AJ.
You can win a ring here. You can chase it right now.
It's not against the rules. The league can't stop you if you keep winning games.
But would this team have drafted Leonard Fournette at number four if Tom Coughlin were not at the top of the heap? Maybe, maybe not.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think that was clearly a Coughlin / Marone move, right? I mean, I understand Dave Caldwell's still the GM. He had a lot of influence. Certainly, he basically ran the free agent process. Now, as collectively, they determine the targets of who they're going to go after. But as Calais Campbell's example shows you, Tom Coughlin didn't meddle in the process. He let Dave Caldwell do the work of the general manager. With Dave, you know, drafting Leonard Fournette is in some ways an indictment of the selection of T.J. Yeldon.
No doubt.
A couple of years ago, you drafted him to be a featured back, a full-time, three-down running back in the National Football League, and he hasn't come close to living up to that. And you may even argue that the signing of Chris Ivory was a bit of an indictment in that department. But Dave Caldwell did that. Would he have gone out there and spent the fourth pick in the draft on Leonard Fournette? Possibly. He might have. He might have felt the same. But I don't know if it's nearly as much of a guarantee. I don't think it's as much of a guarantee. I know philosophically they're going to say they're all in lockstep and all on the same page. But would they have gotten to the same page without the influence of Tom Coughlin on that?
Yeah, I think it's hard to tell, right? Because I don't think it's very far-fetched to believe that if Tom Coughlin wasn't here, that Blake Bortles would still be the quarterback for this team. That's not hard to believe.
No.
Because that would be Caldwell's guy. I also don't think it's hard to believe that Caldwell could have looked at it with Doug Marone coming in as well, who is, you know, he said it again last week. It's like, how many times ideally would you like to throw the ball in a game? He said zero. And I don't think that's about Blake. I think that's about the mentality of Doug Marone, because he feels like if you're running the ball when you want to run the ball and shoving it down somebody's throat, then we're doing what we want to do. That's not going to work in the NFL. He knows that. He's joked around about wanting to run the Veer offense and do these different things. That's not going to happen. But I think Marone might have been enough of an influence without Coughlin here that if Blake Bortles was going to be coming back again this season for his fourth year, that they might have still looked at it and said, we need to do something about what we're getting done in the running game. Like, I still think that would have been a possibility whether Coughlin was here or not. Now, certainly I think Coughlin has an influence on that being part of it, because he's here and he's obviously had that influence. I'm not sure that it wouldn't have gotten to that point anyway, because it's a pretty logical step to take if you're going to keep Blake, seeing what you saw from him in 2016, that we need to be able to run the ball better around him than we have been. I don't know if that necessarily means it would have been Fournette, but I certainly think running back would have been a priority this offseason.
Or is it possible if maybe Tom Coughlin's absence leads to Calais Campbell not signing here, and then you look at defensive end as, even though, you know, you feel like maybe you have two young guys that you hope will both be ascending together, maybe it's still an area of need, and maybe they look at a guy like Derek Barnett or someone like that.
Maybe
in the first round. It's impossible to know, but certainly the day they hired Tom Coughlin and brought him back into the fold had a great impact. Whether it's the best day, that's for you to determine as Jaguar fans out there. That's what we're asking you about today. We said when it comes to on the field, I mean, the game against Tennessee is the highlight. You know, it was the passing of the torch from Gus Bradley to Doug Marone, the immediate response by the team, whether it was, who knows, maybe they would have had a similar performance under Gus Bradley. I'd like to think Doug Marone had some influence in that, and the players afterwards, their comments about the focus on nothing but win this week, and that's the only thing that matters, seemed to indicate that they felt that had some impact in it. But, you know, you throttled what looked to be a rising team on their way to the postseason, you knock their quarterback out. I don't know if you celebrate that. I know some fans do. I don't particularly have a problem. It's a tough game. Guys are going to get hurt. The fact that you kept...
It's a tough game on a clean play.
Right, it's a clean play. You didn't do a dirty... it wasn't a dirty play.
No.
Yes. And the fact that you were largely responsible, your team, for keeping your arch rival out of the postseason, I think, is something that a lot of people want to hang their hats on.
Yeah, and that's fine. Unfortunately, that's what you have to hang your hat on from a on-field perspective in 2016. That's about what you have. That's the
That's really all you have, right?
Yeah.
And now, you could say none of this would have been possible, perhaps, at least in your own estimation out there as you listen in, if they don't move on from Gus Bradley. And so that may be, to you, the day that set everything in motion. Deciding to cut the cord with Gus Bradley, install Doug Marrone as, at the time, the interim coach. If he doesn't win either of those two games, I don't know if he has the job this time around. I do think winning that game was important. And their performance in the follow-up, at least for the first half, was a continuation of that Week 16 victory.
Yeah.
But if you don't get rid of Gus, then you don't have Doug come in. Maybe you don't win that game. Maybe you don't have that memory of beating the Titans and giving you something to hang your hat on the field-wise heading into the offseason. As we said, you know, if Gus is still here, you're going the Tom Coughlin route. You know, everything could be different. And so you could easily say none of this is possible without making that move first.
Yeah, I think you can. I think you can go to free agency as well. And, you know, we mentioned the idea of Boye and Campbell. When you looked at with the guys who eventually actually hit free agency, right, I think there's an argument to be made, and it depends on where you're looking or who's making it, that A.J. Boye and Calais Campbell may have been the two best free agents in football this offseason. There's an argument to be made there with the guys outside of the guys who got franchise tag, got deals worked out right before free agency got started. But the guys that were actually available and became free agents, there's an argument to be made that the Jaguars landed number one and two on the same day. Now, that feels like it's not as big a deal because they've done that kind of thing before, where they landed the guy that you knew they were going to be going after. They got their target in free agency. They've done it. This would be the third offseason in a row where that's kind of been the story for the Jags. So maybe that takes some of the wind out of those sails. But they did do it. I mean, they went out and A.J. Boye was a guy that we talked about for 3 months leading into free agency. They went and got it done. Calais Campbell became the best of the group available as far as pass rushers
right
left in free agency. And it was like, it's not like we were talking about Calais for 3 months, but it was pretty clear, all right, if you're going to go get somebody on the defensive line, Calais is what's out there.
Most likely going to be the guy who's available to you to go out and get.
Yeah.
Right. You would have preferred Jason Pierre-Paul due to age and as a pure pass rusher yeah. is in a higher category.
Wasn't there.
But I think Calais' influence on this team, on this roster, is something that can't be discounted just beyond the X's and O's of going out there and lining up on Sundays. From what we've seen, and we hope that that translates. We don't know that yet, but it goes back to what we've talked about ever since Leonard Fournette came out and said, hey, you know what, day one, I'm in there, my locker's next to Calais Campbell. There's a method to that. Clearly, this guy is going to be maybe the most important piece on the offensive side. The quarterback's always the most important piece. So beyond the quarterback, the most important new addition, certainly, but beyond Blake, the single most important entity on offense this year, let's acclimate into the National Football League by putting him next to a pro's pro and not have to worry about policing him. Calais Campbell will kind of keep an eye on him, teach him how to be a professional, do all the right things as much as he needs to be shown. I'm sure every rookie needs to be shown the ropes to some degree.
Sure.
And that's an indication of not only what they feel about the importance of Fournette, but the importance of the impact Calais Campbell will make in that locker room as well. All right, we'll take a look at some of your responses coming up on the other side, on the text line, on Twitter, and on Facebook, asking you what is the best single day that the Jaguar franchise has had in the last 12 months. Happy first day of summer. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. We're live at EverBank with Jaguars today here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
This is Alan Hearns, and you are listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Wednesday's brought to you by our friends at Metro Rooter for all size plumbing jobs, residential, commercial, industrial plumbing, septic systems, if it has to do with your drain not functioning properly. Same-day service, weekends included. You got a problem today, don't wait until the weekend to get it fixed. You need that fixed now. They've got the right people and the right equipment at Metro Rooter. They've been serving Jacksonville and the surrounding area since 1978. You can log on to MetroRooter.com and find out about all their services, or just pick up the phone and call 695-1911, 695-1911 for Metro Rooter, the people I trust to come to my house when I have a plumbing issue, and our Wednesday sponsor here of Jaguars Today, where, Tony, I look at the text line driven by Duval Ford, and we asked you today out there in the listening audience, what's the best single day that the Jaguars franchise has had in the last 12-month period, from the first day of summer 2016 to, yes, the first day of summer 2017. Longest day of the year, so you can stay up all day pondering this one. But The one, I hadn't seen this one suggested. So here on the text line,
okay,
we got this. The best day of the past calendar year, or the past 12 months, was the introductory press conference of Marone and Coughlin, specifically when Coughlin said, "We are trying to win lunch." He said, first off, it was funny, but more importantly, it showed we were moving on from the flowery, happy Candyland atmosphere that Gus Bradley established on this team. This regime only cares about winning, which has been lacking around here for a decade at least. I totally get that. I totally get the, boiled down to its essence, that is a quote that will live on for a long time in Jaguar lore, right? Like callous disregard for the football, right? Going back in the day, Tom Coughlin talking about guys who fumbled. But I do believe Gus Bradley cared about winning. I just believe his approach was all wrong. It ended up proving to be all wrong. But he believed his approach of not stressing the guys and trying to just, look, don't think about the end result. Think about the steps to get to the end result. It was a more kind of holistic approach to football management that you don't see very often. And I think under the right circumstances, it could have had success. It's similar to what they do up in Seattle, I think, to some degree. But I think that team has developed a core of veterans that police each other and keep each other kind of with the focus being a championship and nothing less being acceptable. And I do believe Gus wanted to win.
He thought this was the way to win.
Right.
He thought this was the way to do it, and it failed spectacularly.
Miserably.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't think from the fan base, some may go too far, but I don't think Gus is going to take a whole lot of unwarranted lumps from the fans. You know,
no.
I mean, it's as bad as it's been since the very early days of the National Football League with Gus Bradley at the helm here in Jacksonville. And we've talked about it before, but the odds of one organization getting possibly the worst quarterback in NFL history in Blaine Gabbert, followed by the worst head coach in NFL history in Gus Bradley, I mean, what are you doing wrong? Like, what did you do to deserve that? You know, it's the reality of what they've had to deal with. And Tom Coughlin does signal from that perspective. The combination of Coughlin and Doug Marone are the complete opposite of that. They are the old school NFL mentality. You know, they are that. And Gus Bradley, while his way of doing things may work if you have the right specific set of guys, right? Like, you may be able to make it work because of what you have in Seattle. They may just not had that combination of guys here. Too young, not enough veteran leadership, none of that stuff going on. But it doesn't matter what the combination of things were if it fails. Now you have these guys that are, they're the opposite. I mean, they are what the NFL has been for 50 years. Are Tom Coughlin and Doug Marone. This idea, since the day that Vince Lombardi walked into a locker room in Green Bay, that's the way successful football has generally been done.
Winning
is Coughlin,
everything. It's the only thing.
Yeah, that's the way the NFL mentality has been. It's back in Jacksonville. We'll see if it pays dividends.
Yeah, see if the results follow that. Also, this one on the text line, in terms of the best day for the Jaguars, any and all post-game trash talk from Jalen Ramsey. Oh, you'll get plenty of that. You'll get it in victory or defeat.
Yeah,
as far as that goes, that's just Jalen.
Yeah, I do wonder, talking about Jalen for a moment and the injury with the surgery, however minor it happened to be. I do wonder if the team doesn't want to come out and say whatever was actually going on with that before Jalen is asked about it. We saw how upset he got last offseason when someone was asking him about the minor surgery with his knee. And it set off a whole thing from Jalen. I do wonder if the team tries to get ahead of it for Jalen with this one, if it is as minor as it seems to be, instead of letting him step to a microphone and be the guy who has to answer the question about what happened with it.
Yeah, possibly. Here's another one on the text line. The best day for the Jags, the day Shad's vision for the Shipyards was approved. He's proven what's good for him is good for the city and the Jags and the future of the Jaguars in Jacksonville. So there you have it. And also, when you're mentioning worst coach and quarterback based on certain statistical parameters, don't forget the worst GM in NFL history in Gene Smith.
How could I forget?
Says a texter right there. So there you have it on the text line. What do we get on Twitter in response to the question of the day?
Here's what we got from JM. He said January 2nd, 2017. That's the day when the Jaguars' 2016 Terabad season was over. From Amish Jaguar, who lives up in the Knoxville area, I believe, spending Christmas in Nashville with the wife's family, who were all mayo lovers. They were miserable due to my gloating. From Jarrell, I know bigger things occurred, but dragging the Titans on Christmas Eve was personally satisfying. From Duval Doom, you know where this one's going. This answer is easy.
Boo Titans.
Boo Titans. Beating them on Christmas Eve to seriously hurt their playoff chances and their quarterback? Oh, yes. From BCB. Couch, the day before the Bengals preseason game, we talked about this one earlier, the last day we all still thought this was a good football team. And from Alvaro, bringing Sir Tom Coughlin back into the fold.
The one, there was a lengthy one. I don't know if they used the hashtag, so you didn't pick it up. But this one from Steven, SRJesse48 on Twitter, said, in all caps, most of it was all in all caps, Gus getting fired, went 14-8, beat the Colts twice to give them Andrew Luck, and then he puts in parentheses, even though he is overrated in my opinion. So now, this is where we've got. Gus didn't win close to enough, and when he did it at the wrong time. Darn you, Gus! How dare you beat the Colts? Look, in the big picture, you can be mad that the Jags helped the Colts get Andrew Luck. That I get. You can't fault players or coaches for trying to win. At least I can't. I'm not going to. I don't. In that circumstance, they don't have. They're working year to year. You know, Gus Bradley's not lifetime devoted to the Jacksonville Jaguars. He is for the length of his contract, or was for the length of his contract. Now he's devoted to the L.A. Chargers. Let's see. Here's on Facebook.
I thought that was 2012.
What's that? You might be right about that.
Yeah, I think it was the year before. I think that was Malarkey.
Ah, yeah, right. Blame Malarkey.
Was it? I can't remember. What year was Andrew Luck drafted?
Well, let's see. 2013 was the first year of the Bradley-Caldwell regime. So, okay, so you're trying to determine what year was the first year for Andrew Luck. You might be right about that. But lump it in with Gus. Just he's to blame
he
for...
He was the first pick in the 2012 draft. So that was 2011. So,
yeah, that's... That's
that was when they had the whole Mel Tucker and Jack
right,
Del Rio.
The mishmash.
Yeah, Mel Tucker. Blame Mel Tucker.
Yes, but no, you can still blame Gus if it makes you feel better. Heap a few more things on Gus's plate as far as that goes. Scott on Facebook said, going with the day that TC returned, I was also glad the day they named Marone as head coach. Pretty much the same day. I mean, unless you're talking about interim head coach, and you knew the culture change was really on its way. Josh said, again, the day they announced the return of Tom Coughlin, what the heck else is there? All this is fine and dandy. Winning is all that matters. Tom Coughlin, hashtag Jaguars today. Jimmy said the day TC stepped foot back in the building as a Jacksonville Jaguars man once again. Robert went with the day they signed A.J. Boye. He's pretty stoked that A.J. Boye is in the mix. You know, in terms of, Tom Coughlin will have an influence on the organization, and that will filter down because I do think Doug Marone is cut out of the same mold as him, so there will be a reinforcement of those principles. And you can't overlook – it's going to be hard to pinpoint, you know, if Leonard Fournette runs for a 25-yard touchdown, do you give Tom Coughlin all the credit for that? You're going to see the results from A.J. Boye on the field. You're going to know, was that a good signing or not? That's a beautiful thing about players. Yeah. Chad went with Calais Campbell signed because he's going to bring much-needed leadership to the young defense. A lot of people on Facebook going with the Coughlin thing. When the Godfather himself stepped back in the building, the one and only Tom Coughlin, cheers to that day. Our first win in dominant fashion over the Titans after Gus was fired as well. I mean, that the shame of it is, I guess if you're 8-8, it's maybe hard to pinpoint a single best day unless you have a particularly impressive win. The Jags have really little on the field to even consider in this category. So we're talking about either firing a guy or hiring a guy to please save us from the guy that we just fired.
Yeah, I mean, that's the reality of the 2016 season, which was really a culmination of the past 4 years of Jaguars football, and hopefully the end of an era, the start of a much brighter new one. I was looking at the 2011 Jaguar stats because that is the year that they beat the Colts in Week 17 and handed them Andrew Luck with Mel Tucker at the head after Jack Del Rio was replaced at some point in the season. That's also the last time that the Jaguars won their opener. They beat the Tennessee Titans Week 1 with Del Rio in 2011. They have not won the opener since. They need to change that one this year quick, too.
That would be nice. That's the best possible thing to get anyone hyped is winning that first week, because nothing you do before then is going to result in a whole lot of hype. He's not a hype man, but he is the clutch guy that we go to as we set up the midday chalk. Mr. T. Wig is in the house. What's up, T. Wig? How are you,
buddy? I am here, and you are back in the house. Welcome back, my brother.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm here, and I cut my tire on the way into the parking lot this morning. So welcome back, Mike. The storms will roll in right about the time you get that jack out of the hatchback.
Right. All the dangerous whitewater rafting, and you come back here and you can't even park your car at the stadium.
Came back in one piece, T-Wig, and I couldn't avoid the nail or whatever it was. And you know it's bad when you get out of the car and you can hear the hiss coming out. Usually you get that slow leak,
No, that means that's probably a new tire right there, Mike.
At least this one I know what I'm facing. I'm not going to get out there and fly into a rage because I'm already well aware. So, T-Wig, for the last 12 months, this being the first day of summer, since the first day of summer 2016 till now, what's the best day the Jaguars have had as a franchise?
I think it was the 24 hours between the infamous plane ride home for Gus Bradley and the next day that we talked about it, because it finally signaled the end of an era and the beginning of a new beginning. Because for a lot of us, that was long overdue. And it got to the point where you never thought it was going to happen. And then when it finally happened, it's like, okay, now we can decompress. And then months later, you can get Tom Coughlin in here. But you can't even think about that until you end the other thing. It's like a bad marriage. You got to get out of it before you can start thinking about somebody else.
Got to rip off that nasty Band-Aid and move on. Gus is now being compared to a nasty Band-Aid by yours truly. Mm-hmm. That's right. Wig, what do you got coming up today on the Midday Chalk?
Obviously, lots of stuff going on in the NBA. Dwight Howard jettisoned again. Florida is getting closer to the College Baseball World Series. We're going to talk about those things. Lots of NFL stuff, and we'll go over some NFL, some Jaguar stuff that you guys touched on too. So we'll get that kick-started in a few minutes.
All right. Well, I tell you what, it's tough being a Knicks fan these days, but if they trade Kristaps Porzingis, I am just about going to murder somebody.
The only way you should be happy about it is if they trade him, get a really good player or high pick back, but somebody takes Joakim Noah $17 million with it.
I don't care. I will take his albatross of a contract. I don't want to give up Kristaps Porzingis, period.
I just
do not want to do it. I don't want to do it to dump Carmelo and Joakim and anybody else as far as that goes. He's the future. All right, brother. We'll talk to you soon, man. Mm-hmm. There he goes. T-Wig, Midday Chalk coming up in just mere minutes. All right, Tony. I feel like I didn't run the show completely off the rails today.
No.
Sure it wasn't? No.
No.
Just partially. My car? It's another story. I'll deal with that as we go. You got some new reading material there.
I do,
Bandcamp.
Yeah. Looking forward to it. He gave me Silverlock. He had tweeted me about it a couple weeks ago and said he had given it to you before you took off for vacation.
He did.
I was just waiting on you to get back so I could get my hands on it.
All right, you've got to be shocked that I remembered to bring it in on the very first day I returned. That's an upset right there. So I'm thinking perhaps tomorrow, think of great sports books that you have read in your time, and we'll get into that a little bit tomorrow. Also, coming up Friday, the mayor himself, Lenny Curry, will join us in studio in the 10 o'clock hour. So start thinking and pass along to us on social media and your various ways of communicating with the program if you've got a sports or Jaguars-related, specific Jaguars-related, but we'll expand it to other sports things that you would like to hear the mayor address. If it has to do with property taxes or other things, we're not going to get into all that kind of. We're going to talk sports and their impact on the city of Jacksonville, particularly the Jacksonville Jaguars franchise, with the honorable mayor of Jacksonville coming up this Friday. So submit those questions or thought starters, whatever, conversation starters to us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, or you could post them on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, and we'll try to incorporate some of those into the conversation coming up later on this week on Friday. Ryan O'Halloran is in the house tomorrow with us, and we're off and rolling. So stick around for the Midday Chalk. Thanks to Agent Gibbs, pinch hitting for Tyler Devitt this week, doing a fantastic job. Thanks to David Altman with Daly's Place stopping by. They've got the new Future concert announced in mid-August, so check that out at dailysplace.com if you need more information or to get tickets. Call 633-2000. That does it for us. Thanks to Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor. Big thanks to Fat Tony for carrying the show on his back all the time I was gone, and did a spectacular job as always. So good to be back with you, and we march towards training camp. Can't wait to be out there for those live practices and shows out at the practice field when it is open to the public on all those dates. We will be field side doing our thing out there. It can't come soon enough, all right? I guess don't wish your life away, but I'm ready for football season after a nice long vacation. It's just getting there from here, and we'll do it. First day of summer, go out and enjoy. For Fat Tony, for Agent Gibbs, I'm Mike Dempsey, signing off for Jaguars Today here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Here come the Titans now from their own 25. Jags 31, Titans 17. Matt Castle drops the throw, throws the left side. That ball is intercepted. Jalen Ramsey, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown! A pick six for Jalen Ramsey. And the Jags are pouring it on the Tennessee Titans.
I can't answer that, but that's all that go ahead.
Is that going to be the focus? What else is there? What the hell would you be doing this for if you wouldn't win?
Yeah.
We're trying to win every. We're trying to win today. Who's going to get the better lunch? I mean, let's not make any misunderstandings about why we're here. Yeah. This is all nice and dandy, but winning is what this thing is all about.
You guys have a good day. Peace.